This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. It's time for Issues and Ideas, a show that features a wide variety of local voices sharing their thoughts and perspectives. Coming up, we asked meteorologist John Lindsay what to expect this coming winter on the Central Coast.
When it's wet, it's going to be very wet, but when it's dry, the droughts are going to be more intense and longer duration. It's one of the consequences of climate change. It's a challenge that we all have to face.
Also, there's a new book out exploring the history, the resiliency, and the beauty of Avila Beach.
I felt a connection with the place. I really did. The people are amazing. They're wonderful.
These stories and more coming up on Issues and Ideas. Good afternoon. It's Monday, October 21st, 2024. I'm Carol Tangeman. Let's start with meteorologist John Lindsay and KCBX's Kim Foster.
I grew up to be a marine meteorologist,
but
I'm still writing a weekly weather forecast for the SLO Tribune and for the Santa Maria Times. So I still kind of stay current with doing that forecast every week. And also I tweet out, X out, and Facebook and Instagram, a lot of weather information.
What has been happening? It seems like it's there's a heat wave upon a heat wave.
Sure. So along the Central Coast, in fact, much of California in the coastal regions, heat waves usually, you know, last for about 72 hours, about 3 days. And invariably, the area of high pressure that produce those heat waves will weaken or move towards the east, towards Nevada or Arizona. This particular heat wave produced record-breaking temperatures for 6 days in a row, which is unprecedented. I've never seen temperatures like this in the month of October for 6 days continuous. It's really unusual.
And that affects a lot of different things, including crops, right?
Yeah, I think much of the grape harvest has been harvested, but of course all the other crops, it has a big impact on them.
Mm-hmm. And so going into the fall, we've had 2 years of pretty heavy rain. Are you expecting that again? Or
so last year was an El Nino. Typically, in our area, it's called District 6 of California. El Niños generally produce above average rainfall, where its evil sister, La Niña, the diva of drought, usually produces below average rainfall, but not always. I mean, there are occurrences like 2 years ago where La Niña condition produced really heavy rainfall. Thankfully, that occurred because we were at the end of another drought, and that broke that drought. So we've had back-to-back above average rainfall years, and that's really helped to fill up our reservoirs and recharge some of the ground aquifers, Kim. And that's really important. This year, it looks like we're going to be in a moderate La Niña, but maybe more importantly, it's going to be combined with the negative phase of the PDO, the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which is a longer cycle. Maybe up to 5 years or so, where the INSO, El Nino Southern Oscillation, usually goes between a year and a year and a half. They swap around quite a bit. So historically, if you look at the records from Cal Poly that go back since 1869, we've never had 3 consecutive years of above average rainfall when there's been a La Nina condition combined with a negative phase of the PDO, which is cooler than normal seawater temperatures throughout the North Pacific. And with this type of condition, we're going to probably see below average rainfall for this rain season.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's a weak La Niña. So that means what?
Well, I think a moderate La Niña is supposed to be, it's classified by a region, it's called 3.4, off the coast of Ecuador, looks at the Pacific Ocean, the equatorial Pacific. And they look at the sea surface temperatures. So if the temperature, the anomaly, which is a deviation from the normal, if that varies between -1 or -0.5 degrees Celsius and +0.5 degrees Celsius, it's called a neutral condition. Also, people call it La Nada or El Nothing. So there's not a lot of forcing there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you get, let's say, 0.5 to 1.0, that's a weak El Nino or negative 0.5 to negative 0.10 degrees Celsius, it would be a weak La Nina. Right now, we're looking at probably negative 1.5 degrees Celsius in region 3.4 off the coast of Ecuador, which would make this a moderate La Nina. So a moderate La Nina combined with the negative phase of the PDO more than likely will probably produce below average rainfall. Mm-hmm. And this is something, you know, that we've seen over the decades. I think John Steinbeck wrote about this in East of Eden. There's a great passage in that talking about there's good years and the farmers rejoice. Then there's the bad years. And, you know, it sends a streak of fear through the Salinas Valley. So this is not new. I mean, we live in essentially an arid region, mm-hmm. and droughts are a very common occurrence. There's no doubt we're going to go into a drought one of these years. I think we'll maybe start this year, but we'll have to wait and see. One thing with climate change, and the models have been proven correct on this time and time again, that when we do have wet years, because a warmer atmosphere can hold more water vapor, that's a law of physics, can't argue with that. And when that water vapor condenses, it releases energy, and it's called latent heat, and that's really the engine behind these storms. So what we're seeing is that when it does rain, rainfall intensities have been increasing. When it's wet, it's going to be very wet, but when it's dry, the droughts are going to be more intense and longer duration.
Oh, okay.
And right now, that's what the models have been really verifying. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the consequences of climate change that we is a challenge that we all have to face.
I remember back in 1980, I guess here it was 109 degrees or something. It was very, very hot. We were in a drought and we had to ration water. Do you see it, if these droughts intensify, that we'd be going back to something that's, you know, basically running out of water?
Sure. I mean, I remember during the last drought, people filling up water trucks and hauling them down to Santa Barbara, the Montecito, mm-hmm. to be specifically, and selling each load of water for a lot of money to keep a lot of that very expensive landscaping alive. Mm-hmm. And people were willing to spend that type of money to maintain their landscaping. Yeah, that's definitely going to be a major challenge for all of us. You know, water is a precious resource. We should always conserve it. I don't know if Mark Twain actually said this or not, but a great quote, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting over.
True. A very expensive commodity when it comes to the drought years.
I should get back to the all-time record high temperatures here in San Luis Obispo occurred mm-hmm. on September 6th of 2020, mm-hmm. so about 4 years ago, a little bit over 4 years ago, the airport reached 117 degrees, and I was there with my little handheld temperature reader, and Cal Poly got up to 120 degrees.
Wow.
And Solvang got up to 121 degrees. And I did some research on that. I've never seen such high temperatures so close to an ocean, either in North America, Central America, or South America. To see those type of temperature gradients were extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Who would ever thought that San Luis Obispo would get up to 120 degrees, for crying out loud?
Yeah, and where was nature's air conditioning at that point? The fog, was it that it just kept the fog?
We had
off?
What's yeah. called Santa Lucia, northeasterly winds, and that kept the marine layer out the sea. And even in foggy Los Osos, you know, the temperatures were, I think, in the high 90s. During La Niñas, the storm track is shifted northward. So British Columbia, the Pacific Northwest, Washington, and Oregon will generally get above average rainfall because the storm track is going up north. For the Central Coast, since the storm track is way up north, that's why we usually get below average rainfall, generally speaking. Now,
and what are those numbers? Like, what's below? What's average? What's below?
Well, at Cal Poly, it's about 24 inches. Up at Rocky Butte, it's around 40 inches. You go down further south to Santa Maria, it's around 13 inches per year, generally speaking.
So the days of the 100-year flood may be behind us because of these two wet years and getting drier? Or do you think that could?
No, I think as was proven up in North Carolina at Asheville and Banner Elk, those were 1,000-year floods. So I think with climate change, despite being El Nino or La Nina or being El Nothing or whatever the PDO is doing, there's always the threat, and we're seeing this in a greater occurrence, that not only 100-year storms, but 500-year storms and 1,000-year storms is definitely a threat because of the warmer atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So there's between a wet year and a dry year. A dry year, you may only get like maybe 3 or 4 storms, where a wet year, you may get the 7 to 10 storms. That's really the difference. We always get rain every year. We never had a year where it's been completely dry. But it's just because the storm track has shifted further north that the majority of those low pressure centers and the associated cold fronts will basically track north of us and keep us high and dry. I always hear that phrase where the eastern Pacific high is either shifted southward and that opens up the storm door, right?
The storm door is open.
The storm door is open and you just get one system after another, like what occurred in 1969 or 1983. Those are all very strong El Niño years, or 1998 was another year that storm door was wide open. And then 2 years ago, the storm door was wide open. Actually, last year we had a great series of weather systems that ripped through the Central Coast.
And are those mostly those warm storms, the Pineapple Express?
Sure.
So they call it?
Yeah, they used to be always referred to as the Pineapple Express because the cold fronts would basically stretch from California all the way down to the Hawaiian Islands, hence pineapples. Mm-hmm. Lately now, a new phrase has been coined. Hasn't been around all that long, you know, a little bit over 20 years. It's called an atmospheric river. It's kind of the new catch-all. Mm-hmm.
In the news business, yes, we now say atmospheric river.
Right, vice the Pineapple Express. But regardless, you know, an AR really can transport a lot of water. In fact, more water than the Amazon River can in a kind of a narrow sort of, you know, geographic plot, and that's when you get these gigantic amounts of rainfall. So, Kim, yeah, I'm really worried that with such a warming atmosphere and warmer ocean water temperatures, the threat of very intense rainfalls is going to just simply increase, while when we do get in droughts, they'll become more severe and more prolonged.
Mm-hmm. My next question was, what keeps you up at night?
I think easily flooding. Another thing though is excessive temperature, especially if they were to occur in the coastal regions. People aren't used to that, and I know
they don't have air conditioning.
Very few people have air conditioning in Los Osos or Morro Bay. Maybe in Cayucas more so, because it's much warmer in Cayucas and Avila Beach and Shell Beach. But you're right, in Morro Bay and Los Osos and Cambria, there's just not a lot of air conditioners, and people aren't used to those really warm temperatures. And then you start having issues with heat exhaustion, and even worse yet is heat stroke. And as you get older, your body has a more difficult time regulating temperature. So if we ever do get in a real heat wave, especially in the coastal regions, but throughout the Central Coast, wherever you are, you really need to check up on the older folks, your next door neighbors, to make sure they're okay.
I grew up in Lompoc and it was always foggy, you know, very cool. And the last few times that I've been out there, it's just been very, very hot, you know. And that was one of the areas where you could count on, where the fog would come in and have that natural air conditioning that it seems like we don't have anymore, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, generally speaking, you know, you got a heat wave that goes for 3 days, and then all of a sudden that beautiful natural air conditioning starts kicking in. You get all the fog coming through the Golden Gate and through Monterey Bay, maybe extending all the way south through the Salinas Valley and Paso Robles that way. And mm-hmm. you have Templeton mm-hmm. Gap, where the fog's coming over the Santa Lucia Mountains and, you know, coming in on the Cuesta, and it really provides cooling for everybody. And, you know, that's why we have these amazing microclimates, where it could be in Avila Valley 110 degrees, you drive up 101 a few miles and you hit the Los Osos Valley and you have those Los Osos winds, those northwesterly winds, the temperatures drop down to the 60s. So when you try to explain these temperature gradients to people in other parts of the country, they don't believe you, because mm-hmm. I mean, easily. In fact, I think I documented where the temperature gradient between Los Osos and Paso Robles was 60 degrees. And as the crow flies, it's not a very long distance. Where if you're in the southeast part of the country, like in Florida or Georgia or Alabama or Texas, I mean, you could just drive for hundreds of miles and the temperatures are uniform, hardly no change at all. Around here, you could drive a mile and have these radical changes less than a mile, heck, a quarter of a mile. Or another aspect, go up. If you go up in altitude, it could be nice and cool and the valley's floor and you drive up maybe 1,000 feet and you hit that temperature inversion layer and oh my gosh, you're on top of the Irish Hills and it's hot as heck.
Yes, so, exactly.
So we're truly an area of macroclimates here.
And this is something we don't normally see here that we had this past year was a tornado, an actual tornado.
Tornadoes have been fairly well documented in California. A lot of people think that we don't have tornadoes, but yeah, we do. And, the first time I was exposed to a tornado was back in 1989. We were going to Cal Poly, my wife and I, and we were living on Kentucky and Fredericks in a house right there. And it was in May, which is unusual. So you get a lot of temperature differentials there. And we had a tornado that came down Kentucky and Fredericks. You know, it wasn't a big tornado. It was F0. On the scale, but the National Weather Service came out and they classified it as a tornado. And it ripped up some trees, ripped up some roofs, and caused some power outages. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we have tornadoes. I think that the Cabrillo Valley is kind of a small version of a tornado alley because we've documented a few tornadoes, weak tornadoes, not strong, but many funnel clouds, a few documented tornadoes, hail. Starting in Cayucas and coming right down through Camp San Luis, past Cuesta, and
into Arroyo Grande, the one that hit this past year.
Yeah,
started in Cayucas and went all the way down to Arroyo Grande.
Sure.
Yeah.
These funnel clouds.
Yeah.
So yeah, and tornadoes are not unheard of here on the Central Coast, but they all tend to be pretty weak. I mean, mostly F0s, naming F1. We've never seen anything stronger than that.
Mm-hmm. If we get into a weather event that's pretty serious and the emergency services puts out a warning, so what are some things that you can do?
So this county of San Luis Obispo has an emergency services. They have a page, and I would highly recommend going to that because that page will describe how to make a go-to bag or a bug-out bag. And in the bug-out bag, you're going to have cash. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you may not be able to get cash from ATMs or perhaps a lot of stores may have power outages and they won't be able to read your credit cards. So it's good to have cash. If you're on meds, which so many people are, you want to have backup medications, right, in this go-to bag. You want to have water. You want to have food. You want to have blankets, right, and raincoats, way to keep warm. Flashlights are hugely important. You don't want to be flumming around in the dark. That's really dangerous. You want to have a powered radio, battery-powered radio, or they even make these solar-powered radios so you could keep in contact because so much of the information is going to be over the airwaves like KCBX. Mm-hmm. It's really important to have a battery-powered radio. And a first aid kit's always a good thing to have. But if you go to the Office of Emergency Services, San Luis Obispo County, they have a whole list of what to put into your go-to bag. Another thing I forgot to mention is your cell phones. Now, unfortunately, your cell phones may not work during a major emergency because they're only designed to have – the cell phone towers are only designed to have so much capacity. And everybody's trying to get on their cell phone to make phone calls, to contact loved ones. They may not work. So have an emergency communications plan with your family and how to contact each other. I would recommend for your cell phone, though, is to have a backup battery, right?
A portable battery, that you could keep charged,
Exactly, and they're not that expensive. But I think the main thing is have a battery-operated radios, either FM or AM, both, right? And some of the nicer ones have the have the weather notifications right from NOAA, from mm-hmm. the National Weather Service, where it works out really well. We have a transmitter up there in Quest the Gray, by the way. And but yeah, it really goes through everything. And what I need to do, Kim, I need to get my ham license. I need to get my ham license. So that's something I got to work on and take care of that.
I was up in the Bay Area and it was very hot, and someone said, this seems like earthquake weather.
Oh, sure.
So I want to know what constitutes earthquake weather, which I know in October, you know, and I was in the big one in 89, and it was very, very warm at that time. Yeah.
Yep, because we had those offshore northeasterly winds.
I know. So is that earthquake weather?
Well, no. I mean, there's been no scientific correlations between what the weather's doing and what earthquakes are doing. But I keep thinking of Neil Diamond's Hot August Night, and I think he mentioned it was, this is earthquake weather, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's where that the origin, the genesis of that phrase came from. I don't know, but no, there doesn't seem to be a correlation between weather and seismic activity. But it's a great question.
So much of the traveling public now is flying everywhere, and the delays are weather related. If you're a traveler, what are the best places or apps or websites to go for weather conditions if you're traveling?
So I think the National Weather Service, and it's easy to get to, www.nws.gov. Mm-hmm. Google or whatever search engine you use, and just put in National Weather Service. And the first thing that's going to come up is a map of the continental United States. And you just click on the region that you live in or the region you're going to. And those meteorologists there, the National Weather Service meteorologists, do a wonderful job. For me, that's the easiest way to figure out what the weather forecast is doing.
Sometimes there's a lot of discrepancies with weather forecasts, you know, overall.
Because everybody's using weather apps on their phones. Depending upon which model that weather app is utilizing, it could radically change by hour by hour. It's really funny. A real meteorologist will use the models, like the global forecast system or the European model or the Canadian model, whatever they're using, and they're using those for guidance, right? And also, what's really important, if you have a forecaster who's been forecasting for one specific area for many, many years, you know, you have all that historical information in your head. You know, I've seen this cold front come down before, and it's just ripped apart. It's washed out. No big deal. Oh, my gosh, I've seen this condition, and it produced floods. When you take the models combined with the human being with has a lot of experience forecasting for one single point, that's the best way to go. And a lot of the men and the women at the National Weather Service have been forecasting for one particular area for many, many years. You go down to the Oxnard office, a lot of those guys have spent 20, 30 years. So you build that knowledge base, and that's throughout the whole continental United States. Mm-hmm. So I tend to believe they do a pretty good job. Now, how artificial intelligence is going to factor in this in the future is really an interesting question, right? So we'll see how that transpires.
It's an exciting time for weather.
It is. and now with climate change is really throwing a big monkey wrench in the whole, you know, the whole calculation. That's for sure.
So we're going to take your word for it. We're going to have a little less rain this year, but it might be more intense rain.
Well, I can actually give you a probability.
Okay.
It's about 80% chance that we'll have below average rainfall and 15% normal and then 5% above. So that's the odds right now. And I guess you could spin a roulette wheel. And if you look at the historical data, that's where that's coming from. However, and I'm not trying to cover myself, but with climate change, that's really kind of a joker.
That throws a wrench into a lot of it.
It really does.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, Kim, it's great to be here. And it's wonderful to be interviewed by you. And it's so important that you guys are here and you could give real-time information, because I think we're so dependent upon these smartphones, we don't realize that during an emergency, chances are these probably will be useless. I mean, this talk with the people up in North Carolina to find out, right? You know, those radios, mm-hmm. you know, the transmitters are pretty robust. And they could set up temporary transmitters. That's just a great way to get a lot of information out. So I really hope that the public and our electeds really appreciate the value of radio and how critical that is, especially in emergency situations.
That was KCBX's Kim Foster chatting with meteorologist John Lindsay. This is Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Carol Tangeman. Up next, we'll talk with the creators of a new book called Avila Beach, California. Paul Carlin and Lisa Wilkerson say it was a labor of love dedicated to Avila residents Pete Kelly and Mary Matakovich.
Nice to be here.
Good, good. Well, it's good to have you here. And the book is so much fun. And it mentions at one point the Avila Beach 150th anniversary, but your book starts well before that because you go back to the Chumash tribes.
Well, when Lisa first proposed doing this, I kind of thought, well, how can I fit into this? Because she's been taking these beautiful photographs of Avila for quite a while. And I just thought, well, I'm a history buff. So that seemed to be where I could fit in and helping. I might have gotten carried away with it a little bit. But then again, having
not at all
been a graphic designer, I wanted to make it very interesting because history can be so boring to some people. So that was a challenge just to try and, you know, make it concise and interesting for those people that like that. But then the second half of the book is really the celebration of Avila today.
Yeah. The first half is kind of like a scrapbook. And then you just open that next page about halfway through and just the beautiful photography. What's your background, Lisa, with photography?
Actually, what got me started with photography was inspired by a tragedy. I lost my brother in a fire, and I was inconsolable for a long time, mm-hmm. but friends encouraged me to take that pain and convert it into a creative zone. And a dear friend of mine who's a poet and novelist write me letters every week and encourage me to continue to do photography. I would take pictures for him and send him in letters. And he loved it so much. He just said, you need to continue this work and get better and better. And so that's what I did. After I completed my first book back in 2010, I just sort of went back to work, retail, and I would just live my life. I didn't pursue photography every day like the professionals do. It's like time to go back to work, time to go back to life, and that's what I did. But in 2019, when my mother was diagnosed with terminal cancer, I was devastated. I was crushed. And I felt like I wouldn't be able to get up out of bed in the morning. And here she was handling this news so well and inspiring everybody around her. You would never know that she was going through such a terrible thing. And I thought, I feel shattered. I can't do that. I can't be shattered. My mom's fighting and look at me. So I had to do something about it. And my mom, being a photographer and a great one at that, loved Avila Beach. And so I decided, well, I got to go to Avila Beach and I got to check this place out. And when I got there, I couldn't believe how wonderful it was, how peaceful it was, and how I didn't slip off the rocks. And
what year was this?
This was 2019.
Okay, 2019.
It was May.
May.
And there were clouds in the sky and the water was so tropical and it just made me feel so much better. Yeah. I just felt at peace. It was so relaxing. And so I would take pictures and I'd show it to her. And then she says, well, I want to see this part of Avila and I want to see that part of Avila. So I started taking more and she would direct me. And we just did this for 3 years until she passed away. And then after she passed away, I went into this terrible creative slump, coming home and not seeing her. Mm-hmm. That was hard.
Yeah.
Hard, very hard. So, but I had a store to run.
Where is the store?
It's in Arroyo Grande.
Okay.
And all these people loved my mom so much. And I couldn't let them down. I had to face them. I had to tell them what happened. But she had a message for them, letting them know how much she loved them and how much she appreciated them. And if I fell apart, I wouldn't be able to give them that message. So it took everything to just get out of bed in the morning, go to work, and do this. But at the same time, I was still trying to finish the project. I promised her I'd finish. And it was tough. Sometimes it was like a rag doll, you know, just dragging myself out there because I was tired and I was grieving. And there was like this Category 5 storm in my head. And Avila really had to perform to stop that internal chatter, you know. And when it did, boy, the chatter stopped.
Do you think that was part of your mother's wisdom to leave you with a project like that?
Yes, because she knew how fragile I was and shy and, you know, dealing with PTSD and serious anxieties. Because when my brother died, I was there. I lost all my memory. I still don't have a great memory of the past, but I had to kind of become a new person.
Yeah.
And through this project, I wanted to become a better person. I wanted to be more helpful to other people, because when you're depressed and you're going through grief, it's all about you. You're just kind of selfish, really. And I didn't want to be that way. So this project has helped me become stronger.
The photographs are beautiful and colorful and vibrant, and I notice a lot of sea life and a lot of dogs and people, and it really does look like the Avila, you know, the second half of Avila after the big dig, which is part of the historical part. If you're just joining us, this is Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio. I'm Carol Tangeman. With me today, Paul Carlin, the art director, Lisa Wilkerson, the photographer of a new book. It's called Avila Beach, California. There's an event coming up, and it's a book release. It's also a fundraiser for the Avila Pier. It's at the San Luis Yacht Club. That's on the pier there at Avila Beach. October 24th starts at 5:30. And the proceeds will fund Avila Beach Community Project. So, Paul, let's go back to you. What is your connection to Avila Beach?
I went to Cal Poly, and for 6 years I lived in Sea Canyon during that period. This would be the 70s. Property I lived, which was 3.5 miles in, part of the building had been the original one-room schoolhouse. And later I lived, was called the Top of the Hill Motel in Avila. Of course, that was before the big dig. One part of my life had a store downtown San Luis Obispo. It was called Turn to Nature. And Lisa came in with one of her books, which was Photography and Poetry by Jeremy Reed. And I was impressed with her photography. And we kind of hit it off after that. So when this project came up and I found a niche that I might be able to help with, that would be the history part, I was more than happy to do that.
Yeah. And there's so much history there. You talk about the fishing. You talk about the trains, the oil.
Right. Avila, you know, the fact that, like, a lot of California started out with the native population and their introduction to the Spanish colonial. We took over coinciding with the gold rush, which was a period that was very prosperous for a lot of Californios until, I think it was 1862. California experienced a 2-year drought that pretty much wiped out the cattle industry and crops. So a lot of the initial landowners found themselves having to sell and divide their land to make ends meet. And of course, it would have been 1874 when the Avila brothers decided to do the township of Avila, sell plots of land there. So that was also a very hard time for the native population, because after the 2 years of drought, you might have gone on for 3 years, there were 2 years of heavy torrential rain. Mm. And after that, an epidemic of smallpox. The area, because it wasn't connected to outside influences as much as perhaps Los Angeles or San Francisco, when Hartford decided to put in the pier and his small horse-drawn railroad to create shipping in the area of goods in and out, it kind of just took off from there, but was very much an industrial area. I mentioned in the book, and there's some pictures, that what is now Sunset Palisades in Shell Beach at one time was the largest oil port in the world.
Wow.
There was so much oil being piped up from Santa Maria and Orcutt that that's where they had had hoped to be able to transport it out to boats. And they built a pier that went out a half a mile, and I think 6 months later it was destroyed in a storm. So all that kind of facility processing went over to Avalo.
When you were talking about the Avalo brothers, that's the 150th anniversary that is being celebrated.
Of the creation of the township.
I thought the Diablo Canyon portion was interesting, too.
Well, that was in some ways a little hard because obviously what's going on there is in flux right now. You know, we kind of maybe know a little bit more of what's going to happen than actually when we were doing the book. And actually, I reached out to PG&E to get clarifications on, you know, what the future was going to hold. And they were very helpful in letting us have information about what they thought was going to be happening.
Yeah. And but you had some good stuff about the past with the protests.
That there was the largest anti-nuclear protest that had happened in the nation up to that point. And, you know, there were 5,000 people that were there at one point. They had to create outdoor showers and facilities over where Cuesta College is. Yeah, it was unusual times.
You also talk about and have pictures of some of the characters from Avalo Beach. Barbara, what's Barbara's last name? I don't know. She was always just Barbara.
Miss Barbara.
Miss Barbara. And Finney Smith, who had the pretzel.
Yeah, that little bit at the end where I'm trying to find something that's a little bit more modern than the real ancient history that has been presented wonderfully in a few other books. Janet Ferris has a book on Avalo Beach, as does Pete Kelly and the Filippino brothers, Jack and Sam, I think. So that's when I was living in Avalo, those pictures of Finney Smith and Pete Kelly. Pete, of course, you know, an amazing chef, and brought kind of a South American-inspired cuisine to the Central Coast. So then there's this building, 500 Front Street, that I realized when I was collecting material had passed from, as I show in the book, you know, 19-cent hamburgers. It had been an antique store, a Mexican tourist store. Mickey and Craig Lester created a gift store there and then a shrimp bar. That was great to be able to show that kind of transition between, I guess it was maybe even the 30s, where they were selling the 19-cent hamburgers up until the Big Dig, when that was all torn down.
Well, now talk about the Big Dig for a minute.
Well, I think for everybody, the extent of how much oil had seeped under the town from the pipeline that ran from the tanks that were on the hill out would have been the Unocal, now the Poly Pier, to boats. So that oil for a while had been processed in Avalo, but pretty much it was the crude that was piped up from Santa Maria and then from the valley was held in those tanks. And then when the boats came in, it was transferred through pipelines that went underground out to the pier to the boats. It had leaked, you know, it had been leaking for a long time. And there were a couple indications that, you know, there was a little explosion in a basement on Front Street from the fumes that were accumulating. And, you know, when they finally got around to doing some exploratory work, they realized that it was pretty extensive. Unocal really had to have their feet held to the fire to get involved in what had become the cleanup. It finally was recognized that the oil was polluting the drinking source of water, a well in Avalo. And there were federal regulations that kicked in that then Unocal had to recognize. And there was a lot of hullabaloo for quite a while about, you know, how things were going to change. You know, there were a lot of locals that were living in Avalo at the time that weren't going to come back.
Yeah.
You know, it. I'm not going to say that it's been more gentrified, but it certainly has changed. There had just off of Front Street been a trailer park where a lot of the locals lived that were working locally. And the majority of all the frontage property was torn down. The Avila Bay Inn stayed, that was further up on the hill. And the only two historical buildings that were moved were the Yacht Club and the Avila Grocery Store were moved out to Cherry Canyon and brought back when the town was cleaned up.
If you're just joining us, this is Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio. I'm Carol Tangeman. With me today, Paul Carlin, the art director, Lisa Wilkerson, the photographer of a new book. It's called Avila Beach, California.
The adventure of just doing the photography was very interesting. Being out at Pirate's Cove.
Four in the morning.
Yes. Oh. It was just an amazing experience. It was very healing.
Some of your photos in the book remind me of, you know, during the pandemic, driving out there, no one around, and there was just this, I don't know, peacefulness.
The project really took off during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. That's where I could kind of be alone and do this work, and I did it alone.
And if you go out to Avila in the middle of the day, you might not be very impressed, other than the location,
depending
about how things look. You know, bright sunshine. And so she's getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go get that color, to go out there like almost for almost 2 years every day after work to get that.
It was crazy. Full-time job and then, you know, getting up early and then going out for sunset and then going back to work. That was my life for a while. But
what a peaceful way, though, to start your day and end your day.
Oh, yes.
You know, heading out there.
I really believe that this project helped me with my family life, with my work life. But I'm very impressed how resilient Avila is going through that with a big dig. Mm-hmm. And then all the storms that come through and how beautiful it is. I felt a connection with the place. I really did. The people are amazing. They're wonderful.
We met a fella. He goes by Birdie. His name's Dave Burnett, who is part of the group that are fishing and shipping hagfish. I hadn't realized that that is the biggest...
Hagfish.
Well, they're sometimes called slime eels, but they're not really an eel, even though they look like eels.
And why would one fish a fish that's either called a hagfish or a slime eel?
Because it's a delicacy in South Korea. These fish are caught and kept live and shipped live. And it's the biggest income-producing fishery, second to Dungeness crab. When the regulations were put in place where the fishermen out there weren't able to do troll fishing, it's really changed from being a big commercial fishing port, well, you know, that's relative in size, to being more of a sport fishing location. But there is hag fishing and Dungeness crab going on. Yeah. And as we point out in the book, the hagfish is really amazing because of the defense mechanism. It can release this slime. I think in a fraction of a second, this stuff will expand 1,000 times. And it's being studied both by the Navy, because they feel if it could be artificially reproduced, it would be stronger than Kevlar.
Oh.
And also when it's first out of the fish, it's sterile and makes a burn bandage.
Wow.
So that was curious to learn about things like that.
I bet you learned all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Once the book is out and about, you know, then people come up with other stories. And...
Oh, yeah. They had an event at the old firehouse in Avila Beach where there were a number of old-timers that showed up and shared their stories. Hal Martin, who had relatives that started the Avila Grocery.
And, of course, Pete Kelly.
Yeah.
His stories.
He has wonderful stories. He actually got me out of my creative slump.
Oh, good.
Yes. And so thank you, Pete.
Yeah. Pete is a historian, and he was a touchstone for me. The book is dedicated to both he and his wife, Mary. Because they are so unselfish in the amount of personal time and energy they've put in to try and make Avila a better place.
Yeah. So. Yes, yeah. That's why we dedicated the book to them, because they're there for Avila every day. They devote their life every day for years and years and years.
Well, we just aired an interview. I actually interviewed him back in 2022 when he first came out with the cookbook about, you know, some of the other books that he had done as well. We just re-aired that interview because people liked it so much. And, I mean, the cookbook is amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have any last thoughts? Let's start with you, Lisa.
Well, in times of difficulties, and when one is experiencing very challenging situations with family, embrace every moment, find ways to get through it, find a positive way to get through it. Don't throw away those moments that you have. Even if you feel terrible, just keep going and celebrate every moment with that person, and live life to the fullest. And Avila's been through a lot. You know, my family and I, we've been through a lot. But we work together every day, and being in Avila definitely has made me stronger and less shy.
And you've brought out a lot of beauty for other people to enjoy in this book.
I hope.
It's pretty much a passion project. Yeah. You know, this isn't something that we expect to benefit from financially. No. Books really, you know, that's a hard thing to do, especially when something like this has been created with just the local market in mind. But we're hoping that people that love the area will find, you know, something that inspires them to go out and see it more, because it's here every day, and it's an amazing place to live. We're all very lucky to be here.
Oh, we are.
And Paul and I love Avila so much. We poured all this time into it because we believe in it.
Yeah, and the help and support of the community.
And the community came in, and they made it even better.
Yeah.
Made it better, and they made our experience better. So thank you to all who's a part of this book.
It reminds me of the fun that I've had at Avila Beach, you know, over the years.
We're not selling it online, but we do have a website that tells where you can get it. So currently there's places like CalFresh and Pismo and Kelsey Winery in Sea Canyon, Boo Boo Records in San Luis Obispo.
Photoshop. I saw it in there yesterday.
It's AvilaBeachBook.com.
AvilaBeachBook.com. There's an event coming up. And it's a book release. It's also a fundraiser for the Avila Pier. It's at the San Luis Yacht Club. That's on the pier there at Avila Beach. October 24th starts at 5:30. And the proceeds will fund Avila Beach Community Project. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate being able to share this with you and everybody else.
Absolutely.
That was Paul Carlin and Lisa Wilkerson, the creators of a new book called Avila Beach, California. This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. I'm Carol Tangeman. Up next, we'll hear from a member of the band Fruition. Band member Kellen Ossibok spoke with KCBX's host of Across the Tracks, Brad Kyle.
Coming down the line with me, it is Kellen from the band Fruition. They're coming to town down from Oregon for a visit to Slow Brew this Friday night. And they are on the road promoting a brand new album that I really like the title of, called How to Make Mistakes. Welcome to the show, Kellen.
Hey, what's up, Brad? Thanks for having me, man. We'll be on the radio today.
Really appreciate you taking some time here to spend with us. Let's talk about Fruition and how it came to be.
We've been a band since 2008. We met kind of by chance, or maybe fate. I'm not sure. Depends on what I'm believing on any certain day when I wake up. But we kind of cut our chops as a busking outfit in Portland, Oregon, playing on the street, trying to get people's attention, trying to get some bucks to buy dinner and beer. And we got people's attention. We had a knack for three-part harmonies from the very first time we sang together. And unbeknownst to us at the time, would build our entire career kind of around that. And now 16 years later, we're together. We are a 5-piece Americana rock band, which you can't really do on a street corner necessarily. So we've evolved from the street corner days.
But so you migrated from more acoustic instruments and small setups to larger, more rocket setups. Sure.
See, even when we were playing on the street, we wanted to rock. We all come from backgrounds of loving to rock out and also backgrounds of loving sweet, sensitive, fragile music. And so Frischen kind of tries to strike the balance between soft sensibility and, you know, also indulging everyone's, I think, innate desire to rock out a bit. So we kind of strike the balance. No matter what we do, we have 3 songwriters in the band. So we have a lot of different, you know, musical information to download for the listener, but we have these harmonies that kind of tie the whole thing together. And that's been our calling card.
I think some of the best bands out there are just crossing genres. And because in the old days, everybody was, you know, slotted into these boxes that they just had to fit, and they had to, you know, do this, and don't do anything else.
Right. Yeah.
But over the years, we've seen that open up. It started way back when with me, because I love everything from Merle Haggard to Metallica and in between, and that seeps into the music. You can't help it, but when you're making your own music, to kind of see all of that come in, and I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think that not really fitting into one box, it's just, that's more reflective of real life. Frischen kind of just reflects the human experience, which is, it's all over the place.
why don't we listen to a little bit of the fruits of your fruition right now?
Uh-huh. And
this is a track called Scars.
Well, I've been spoiled, I've been dirty, I've been going bad in a hurry, and my heart beats slower as the candles burn lower, and there ain't too much left of me now.
Let's check out something else from the album right now, and a track called Saturday Night. Can you tell me a little bit about that song?
Some songs take me months of agonizing to kind of complete the puzzle, and some songs just kind of come out in the course of an evening, and that was the latter. That one's just trying to describe the simplicity and calm that one can feel when they're in their happy place, whether that's with their person or in solitude or with their favorite book, somewhere where they feel safe and where their heartbeat can slow down a little bit. Obviously, that looks differently to all of us. I think I kind of tried to make a song that conveys the feeling, so in the hopes that someone might get some of that peace, because I was feeling peace when I wrote it.
From their new album, How to Make Mistakes, this is Saturday Night, Fruition.
Down on the street, they're meeting their lovers. I hope that they're being good to each other.
Yeah, Kellen, you know, it's interesting when you talk about the songwriting process. I'm a musician and songwriter myself, although not as prolific as I should be. But yeah, some of my favorite tunes just kind of show up. And
yeah,
Neil Young describes it as the great download, just comes to you almost fully formed. And sometimes those are my favorite ones. So that was a conversation I actually had with Neil Young a few months ago. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, cool, man.
Yeah, he stopped by the station here promoting his new record. It was kind of crazy. It was very hush-hush, and I didn't interview him, but I surprisingly got to spend a lot more time with him than I thought I would, and he started talking to me like 2 old guitar players. We are speaking with Kellen from the band Fruition, coming down from Oregon for an appearance this Friday night here at Slow Brew. They are out on a new album called How to Make Mistakes. How many releases have you guys done?
We put out 5 or 6 full-length albums and then just as many EPs. For a while, we were putting out some 45s, which just had a song on each side.
So there's a lot, basically. It's
there's a lot.
Nice.
A lot.
Okay.
You know, with 3 songwriters, we have no shortage of songs. We're always trying to keep it going.
So, I mean, when you have 3 songwriters, you guys are all competing for space, you know, in the set and on the album. How does that work out?
Well, you know, it's funny that you use that word competing, because for a while it did kind of feel like that with three songwriters, that you're competing to be heard, or that you want to make sure that you're equally represented on an album, you know, an album that's going to have 10 or 12 tracks. And so there's some ego involved there. And I don't think it was necessarily a detriment, because I think that in a way that pushes you to bring your best material out and to polish your stuff so that it stands up with stuff that you deem great from other people. But in recent years, we've luckily kind of learned how to dissolve a little bit of that competition and ego and work together, collaborating on songwriting stuff, bringing something like just a chorus to the table, or just a hook, or maybe even a full song, and being like, hey, I have this song. Is it good? I think it's good. Let's work on it together. And so maybe that means changing some of the lyrics, or getting rid of a verse, or figuring out a cool bridge movement, or figuring out a nice hooky instrumental thing that ties the whole thing together. So yeah, there is a little bit of that competition, but I think we do it in a healthy way. I think that we inspire each other. It's funny. Sometimes I'll be in a songwriting drought, and one of my bandmates will play or send over a song that's great, and I'm like, I got to get to work. Like, and then that was like a little spark that I needed to open up my journal and finish something that I've been trying to work on, or just sit down with the guitar and let it speak through that. So yeah, you know, healthy competition is it's good for business.
Well, it sounds like it has really been healthy for you guys up there, and we wish you all the success.
There. Thanks, man.
Tell us how we can see you on the web, and where we can listen to your music, and where you guys are going after Slow Brew. What's next for you guys?
Well, like you said, we're on an album release tour, so we're out here trying to move this album, trying to get people to hear it. We just got done with a little run in the East Coast, and the San Luis Obispo show will be the second to last show of our West Coast portion of the album release. We'll be in LA at the Troubadour the next night. We have a very small team and crew. We drive ourselves around. We do all this stuff for the love and to hopefully make a living. And the only way we do that is by selling albums and selling tickets. That's hard to do these days, so I really appreciate you giving Fruition some airplay and giving me a chance to chat. We're super easy to find on the web, fruitionband.com. On social media, we're FruitionPDX, PDX being the Portland airport code slash, you know, slang name for the city. It's a crazy algorithmically inclined world out there. So honestly, I'm such a huge fan of the radio, because it represents a simplicity that is hard to find in other mediums these days. I'm a big fan of the radio. So I appreciate you giving us the time.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a really fun night coming up Friday night at Slow Brew with Fruition. Kellen, I want to say thanks. Take care. And right now, let's check out one more track from Fruition's new album, How to Make Mistakes. Here's Can You Tell Me?
So just who do you think you are? Throwing your stones at the pigeons, at the pigeons that are starving in the concrete jungles of man. Where's a man supposed to go, except for where he's standing, when he's standing in the quicksand? Struggling only makes you sink.
You can hear a longer version of this interview and more music from Fruition coming up this Thursday night on Across the Tracks. That's from 8 to 10 here on KCBX Public Radio. You've been listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. Gary Eyster composed our theme music. A special thanks to all our guests and contributors this week. I'm Carol Tangeman. Join us each Monday from 1 to 2 in the afternoon for more local stories. You can head to our website to learn more about what you heard today or to listen to past segments, kcbx.org.